Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's T Clinic. Men's T Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, Eldorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-T or visit mensteclinic.com.
Hour four of the G-Bag Nation, Stephen Jones talking Dak contract, talking Amari. How would you characterize the last meeting with Dak's agent? So much good stuff in here, and we do have the audio as we continue on your home of the Cowboys, 105 through the fan for the next 2 hours. The Leaning Tower of Dallas in my rearview mirror, it's just down the road there on 75, the service road coming north, a little bit backed up. I think I do have some bad news. I think this is a 9-to-5 operation. The guy with the crane just went home. They are not swinging that wrecking ball. I don't know. Maybe it's the hours. There could be, you know, many different theories here on what exactly has stopped the work. I figured they'd be working around the clock. I wonder if the tourism board called the construction team and said, guys, let's try to drag this out a couple of weeks.
We got something hot here.
Yeah, they're all talking about us on the cable news. It's nonstop. We're still trending on Twitter, for the love of God. People are flocking to our fair metropolis to check out the Leaning Tower of Dallas. Slow it down.
I think this is one of those things where what you had was two elite athletes going toe-to-toe, right? You have a building that refused to fall down when demoed against a man in a crane with a wrecking ball.
Yeah.
This is unstoppable force, immovable object. After spending 8 hours on it, dude in the crane went, he wins.
Not happening.
I can't do it. Let's fight a different way.
Need something else.
Get now, more C4.
How about the general with those, what are they, F-22s?
Yeah.
A couple of rockets?
I don't think that is a better idea than hitting it with a bigger wrecking ball.
Oh, bigger wrecking ball.
Yes.
Yeah, when they brought out the 8-pound bowling ball to serve as a wrecking ball earlier, we should have known that 7 hours later we'd still be here talking about essentially the same structure.
They look like they have taken down today, legitimately, two walls of the top floor.
Yeah.
Like that, the silver part, that is the elevator
shaft,
right?
And maybe some cubicles.
So they've exposed the elevator shaft at the top, and that's what they accomplished today.
Okay.
That's what
they
did.
You know, I suppose they could be back at it tomorrow, but I'm going to go with Jeff's theory right now. I think they've decided, boys, we need better equipment or we're not going to get this done under budget.
I'm saying crew change.
Yeah, you think somebody's coming back?
Crew change.
I'm thinking crew change.
Why wouldn't they leave the wrecking ball? It's gone. They left.
Oh, it's I can't
yeah,
see
it. Yeah, it's not there. Unless
you sure it's on the other side of the building?
Maybe it is on the other side. I don't know.
I have no visual confirmation. I do not have visual confirmation the crane is still on
scene.
What's the name of the full-size Honda truck?
The Passport?
Okay, why don't they get a Passport out here, put a winch on the back of that bad boy, hook it into the middle of the building, and pull it down. Pull it down.
You don't even need, like, a 3/4-ton truck or
no,
anything?
No, I just need a full-size and a winch.
I think it's the Honda Ridgeline.
Get a Ridgeline out here. We can do this.
There we go.
Okay. The Passport is a nice SUV,
get
though.
Somebody with an
looks
F3.
Looks like the Tesla truck. The Tesla truck.
There you go. Tank?
Yeah, get a battery-powered one.
Get somebody with an F-350. Slap a grill guard on it and ram into that thing.
Smart auto leasing could help you with
get
that.
Get a dually.
I really feel like Leaning Tower of Dallas content could carry the rest of the show. It's that interesting to speculate on it, but this is a sports broadcast.
I'm going to go to sleep there tonight. I'm going in.
Stephen Jones, cut number one. Where are you on the Dak contract as of now?
Where do you stand with Mr. Prescott?
You know, a little bit of this, we've been wanting to see how this labor agreement's going to go. And obviously makes a big difference on a contract this big. But obviously, we're optimistic, and our goal is to get it done before you have to tack, last day to tack.
Are there plans to talk to his guys while you guys are here?
We haven't. Will we talk to him?
Yes.
Hopefully so. We don't have a firm meeting set up yet, but the intent would be to to visit with him. He also has several of our other players as well.
More negotiation or more just spelling out what lays in front of them over the next couple of days, couple of weeks, as far as we have to see what it does with the CBA? Because he's telling Dak and his agent, you know, we're really thinking about tagging the hell out of you. You might just want to come do a deal, you know, just take what we're giving you.
And they don't have a meeting set up, so it sounds like they're just going to be like, listen, you know which restaurants we'll be at in Indy at night. Come on by if you want
to
drink.
I mean, and to everybody else around the NFL, you know, we might just tag the most important player too, unless you guys want to rally your guys and come sign the deal. You know, if you sign this deal, then we'll negotiate a lot easier with you. Look at that. Look how that works, guys. What do you think, team leaders? Guys getting franchise tagged? I don't know. I don't think Steven would be that specific about an element of their contract negotiations unless he was trying to work it through the media somehow. He's usually very non-committal about talking about elements of their negotiation unless there's something to be gained from them.
Yeah, and what's to be gained might even be less about the actual Dak deal than kind of doing a two birds with one stone thing here.
Okay.
Because I was reading about how the owners really want to push this CBA through because they really want to rework the TV deal as soon as possible.
It's important.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
TV's so important, yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to get this pushed through so that they could get another TV deal done before politics might interfere in one way or another.
Very interesting.
So they're like, hey, can we get this thing done? Let's get this thing pushed through. And so I think that'll be a big thing during the combine is the owners and players like, hey, can we get this done?
I like it. I like it. Very interesting. Okay, let's go on to the next Steven Jones cut then here. Number three, Lucius, why didn't you guys discuss the contract earlier in the season?
I just don't think, you know, we've had our hands around what the next steps are. And, you know, we were pretty, you know, obviously we didn't end up getting it done because they were pretty entrenched with their thoughts. And we were pretty entrenched with our thoughts. And I think really, that's the facts of where we were.
Right.
Certainly, we've done a lot of thinking about it and looking at it, and we'll see where we end up.
Any hindsight, or that maybe that was a mistake by being?
I'm not going to hindsight it.
Not going to hindsight it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what was in their minds. Did they bet against Dak? Did they think, we don't think you're going to go out there and play that well? Or, you know, what's the idea for them considering other quarterbacks, even their own players, will come up after 3 years and get deals done?
Sounds like they didn't trust him.
Yeah.
It really does. The way they negotiated this deal, or the lack of their way they've gone about it now, is they're going to say, okay, we know we have the ability to tag you, and we're going to make you play for this, but then when the kid plays well, you don't want to go through the deal. You use it as an excuse that you don't know what the CBA is.
Yeah.
You had an idea what the CBA was going to be. You're on the competition committee. You have an idea. Your father is one of the pillars of the league ownership. You have an idea.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Cut number six, how would you characterize the last meeting you had with Dak and his agent?
It just kind of stopped. You know, and we kind of left it where it was. And, you know, I wouldn't say there was anything acrimonious. We just, I guess they felt they were done where they were, and we felt like we were kind of where we were, and we never really got going again.
Given the success you guys
have. Not supposed to deal with him at this stage?
Well, once we didn't get it done, no, I'm not surprised we don't have it done. You know, once we didn't get it done, you know, right there at the beginning of the season, it certainly doesn't surprise me that it's not done yet right now. You know, I was surprised that we didn't get it done at the beginning of the season. And obviously, you know, Jerry's thoughts on it. We all thought we were close, but we weren't able to get it done.
Yeah, you know, and I think I totally agree with what he's saying right there. When we didn't get it done, it's not a surprise we still don't have it done. It would be a surprise come March 12th. That's the next deadline where I think if you wanted to get concerned about it from a Cowboys perspective, if you really want Dak, if we get to March 12th and he's sitting there on the tag, that's when this thing would get really, really interesting as far as where's the long-term future. Because you play out another year, and now it's ridiculous how much more the quarterback has the leverage.
It might be a situation, too, where they're ready to move on.
Wow.
Maybe. It's something you have to think about. It honestly is. If you're in a situation, he plays well, then they know. They know, okay, now, yes, we do have to pay this guy. But if it doesn't work out, then they'll say, you know what, we're going to just blow this thing up and move on.
If you seriously want to move on from him, you should blow it up now.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, don't let him come back because he's going to put up 100 passer rating.
If there's doubt right now, move on.
Yeah.
But that, you know what, they keep talking. They put on a brave face out there. I just don't think inside the building it's that way.
Yeah. I don't know if brave is the word that I would use. I would say, you know, tone deaf to what's actually going on.
Brave as far as saying, oh, he's our guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's our guy. But in reality, he's not your guy.
Very interesting, Brian. Okay, number seven. Would there come a point? Oh, this is exactly it. Would there come a point where the Cowboys move on from Dak here, Stephen Jones?
Absolutely not. I mean, Dak's our quarterback, and you know, he's our quarterback for the future, and we have nothing but the greatest respect for him. He's a competitor. You know, he's won a lot of football games for us. Obviously, he, like us, we all want to take that next step, you know, and get into a championship game and, you know, get to the big game and ultimately win a championship. So there's no thoughts like that.
Haven't talked since September.
Yeah.
Were those that statement at odds with itself a little bit?
Yeah.
Because towards the end, it sounded like the way they were talking about Garrett last year. Yeah. It was like, you know, yeah, he's our guy. We love him. He's the best. He's going to be our quarterback. He's incredible. We would like to get to a title game. We haven't. We'd like to.
Why didn't you get the deal done then?
That's my biggest problem is, and the reason why there's no way they can be totally sold on him is, draw me the scenario of this last football season that brings Dak's number down.
Doesn't exist.
His leg falls off.
Yeah.
A career-ending injury.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he was going to go out and throw 20 touchdowns and 26 picks.
Yeah.
What sort of season was going to bring Dak's number down? There's not one.
No.
So you knew if you didn't get the deal done last year, it was going to cost you. You knew that. You had to.
Your team's too good.
Yeah. And he's not going to play bad.
No.
A young, good quarterback, the money keeps going up. It keeps going up. It keeps going up. And it's going up fast. So if you didn't do it, you knew where you were going to end up.
Yeah.
And if you didn't know where you were going to end up, then that's just being inept. And I don't believe they're inept. But
they are now.
You had to know that 28-30 was going to go to 35-40. That's where it was going.
Yeah.
That's it.
I don't think they're inept either, but I think their casual arrogance about being in control gets the best of them sometimes. Their overconfidence about what they're going to be able to pull off can kind of get the best of them. How about the idea of holding Dak to the playoff win thing? I guess if it played out an entire career and in meaningful games, he played bad. You're like, there's another elimination situation. But I feel like when the chips are down, Dak gives you something really nice most every time. I look at playoff runs as organizations win those. And if you want to hold the head coach or the front office more responsible for those, I get it. But going to individual playoff games, how much quarterback responsibility is in there for you, Mr. Broadus?
I'll tell you what, though. You got to give Dak high marks. He's gone toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers. It took a 3rd-and-19 completion to end that game. Yeah. You know, you look at he's beaten Russell Wilson, who we talked about as the highest-paid quarterback in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to say you'd have to give him high marks for how he's played in playoffs.
Yeah.
It's everybody else. Maybe Jason Garrett let him down. Jason Garrett's no longer here. Maybe some other guys have let him down. Maybe those guys will be gone, you know, this time, you know, as we get to the season. But yeah, I don't think you could give anything but high praise to Dak for how he's played in playoff games.
Let's go ahead and sneak cut 13 in here, Lucius, real quick. We do have one more minute. Stephen Jones talking Amari Cooper here. Are you worried you could be running out of time to get a contract done with your star receiver?
Deals get done once you decide. It's like DeMarcus Lawrence. Went on for months and weeks, and, you know, then we got on the phone with him, and it was done.
Zeke.
In 36 hours. Same thing with Zeke. I mean, there's a lot of sitting and waiting, and then you get the momentum, and then things happen. So, no, I'm not worried. I'm having a month, a long time in a negotiation.
You see how real that thing is of whoever picks up the phone first loses?
He's basically like, what are you talking about? If we want to get this done, we'll get it done in a day.
Yeah, we could. And you know, if this kicks off March 11th, we'll get it done because both sides are in a stare down right now.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as someone picks up the phone, the other side knows, okay, they're a little bit desperate. Who's win this thing? Who's got the biggest balls, you know? Are you Dak Prescott willing to tell the team, I am going to walk away if you disrespect me like this? And then just say, no, tag. I want the tag. And if you're the Cowboys, you're really going to say, we're going to walk away from a franchise quarterback if you insist on $40 million.
And I don't think Dak wants to say those things, which is why he's doing the perfect thing, which is my agent's got it.
Yeah.
Because my agents will say that. They can do that. And I'm not the bad guy. I'm just here to play football.
But when the agent calls you and you're Dak and they're like, the agent's like, we literally have 1 minute until the tag is on. Do you want to settle for 34? What's Dak say?
What do you think?
I would say absolutely yes, but I haven't. Yep. I
would
been...
ask my agent, what do you think?
Oh, that was what, yeah, that's yeah. what you tell him.
Yeah.
I mean, and that agent has a lot riding too.
Yeah.
You know what Mike said last week? Can that agent really come back to the agency and the NFLPA and have less?
That's a lot of damn money for a quarterback, though.
It is.
He negotiated a top three deal for a quarterback. You should hold your head high for that one.
Very good. Okay, when we come back, G-Bag Nation, Cowboys news of the day. Woody is the latest legend to disagree with the rushing GOAT. It's next year on The Fan. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. We'll get you some Cowboys news of the day. We got to talk Mark Cuban. Are you disappointed or excited about him voicing his displeasure to these officials that just they can't figure it out? You know, I do agree with his big point overall. NBA officiating is a disaster. Segment's brought to you by The Glass Doctor. It's brought to you by Soda, state-of-the-art weight loss. And it's brought to you by Mark Rubin. If credit card companies are blowing up your phone, do what more fan listeners do. Make the free call to Mark Rubin at 1-800-LAWYERS. He'll stop all the harassing collection calls and stress. Official lawyers of the Tolo, Rubin and Associates there. Mark Rubin has you taken care of. By the way, 12 years, no dentist, no cavities.
That a boy.
Get out of here.
Well done.
Took care of business the other day.
Really?
Yeah, they're on Friday morning.
Naturally.
They were pretty shocked.
Naturally good teeth.
Yeah, they say it comes down to the bacteria. How much? What kind of bacteria you have in your mouth? And they're like, yeah, you just don't have much cavity bacteria. But they said, don't do that again.
Any flossing problems?
No. The
really?
Gum lines are pretty good.
Oh,
which
really? I thought it'd been a mess.
I had just one minor issue from like an underbite thing. This tooth keeps on getting rocked. Mm. You know, it's kind of messing with the gum line there under that bad boy. But
sure.
Yeah, everything's pretty dang good. Which I was
congrats.
12 years. We're looking at like 15 years on and off dipping, you know, not like Jeff, but I rolled that way up into like 6 years ago. So I'm thinking of all the bad buzzwords heading into that dang dentist, right? A Tolo hooked me up, right? A Tolo was like, dude, my wife works right down the street from you. Go see her. She did a great job. And I was thinking, you know, all the bad things, but no gingivitis, no leukoplakia. No,
you'd know.
He's playing tonight, Luca Plakia.
Is that right?
Luca.
Yeah.
Luca Plakia.
Oh, he's a go.
Gingivitis, is that the stinky mouth? Is that what that one is?
Yeah.
That's halitosis.
That's halitosis. Okay,
yeah.
That's the one that you would know.
You
somebody
will.
Would tell you.
Yeah, hopefully.
You hope.
Okay, it is the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan, and I teased the Cowboys news of the day. Darren Woodson was great. He called the idea of Dak taking a pay cut a slap in the face. Tough one for Emmitt Smith. It's been a rough week for 22. Very few people, maybe except the Jones family and the most extreme Dak doubters, are seeing things Emmitt's way right now. And to me, I said it earlier, I think what it comes down to, has anybody ever taken a pass on a quarterback after 4 or 5 years? Rookie contract up, he's been doing this, he's won the division, he has a career passer rating approaching 100, and I know that's not the best metric, but it does get you in the ballpark, right? There's very few quarterbacks who have gone out and had a passer rating over 90 that have had the kind of careers that you would not want to sign. Even a ton of them in the 80s, if you go back far enough. But, I mean, if you want to be one of the only teams to lose a franchise quarterback because you think you have a better plan, I am up for listening to that plan.
Me too.
I think there's some exciting ideas to do that. I would just be shocked at this point if the Cowboys, like, lay precedent moving on from a QB like this after 4 years.
Do you feel like, and I was going back when you said that, General, do you feel like the Chargers gave up on Drew Brees? To get Phillip
there was, Rivers. But that was a rotator cuff, right? They thought
that's what I'm saying, though. A guy that had won games for him and a young quarterback and all that, and they just said, "Nah, we're moving on."
Yeah,
I mean that's the only one I was trying to think of. If there was a young quarterback out there,
hey, that place
that you moved on from, I was just trying to answer your question.
Healthy, and
okay.
You know, durable. I don't think you could check all those boxes, but the Drew Brees thing is interesting, right? Because whether the guy's hurt or he's not an MVP caliber thrower, you know, there's doubt in your mind right there. So I'll listen to Brees for sure. They were also in a great position to end up with his replacement, right? Like if the Cowboys were in the top five right now of the draft, it would be a super interesting
They'd take a runner for you
guys. Take a running back. Yeah, running back there.
You guys would lose your mind.
So my opinion is a deal's getting done, right? We're going to be talking on The Fan here. At some point, it's February 24th. It's a leap year. 5 more days of this, 12 more days of 17 days. We got 2.5 more weeks of this, right? And then we will be liberated from the Dak discussion.
I think they'll get a deal done.
I'm betting on very good conversations coming off the bus there in Indianapolis. And I mean the bus, the Cowboy bus that's parked there where they do all their meetings.
Jerry and
I said this last week.
Staben.
I feel like that we're just going to start hearing some good news out of that. We'll see.
Okay, Morning News has a story up. I'm just throwing it out there to mess with Jeff a little bit.
Oh, dear.
They're doing a Cowboys position preview over there at the Morning News.
Mm-hmm.
And they write, despite down year for Ezekiel Elliott, running back could be the Cowboys' strongest position. Look at that.
Oh, and see, I won't fight on stuff like that. I would fight on how important is that.
Yeah.
And I would say not very. But having a good running back is great. You can find a good one all the time, though, whenever you need one.
It's become very important for them to not only have Ezekiel Elliott with the first overall pick and the $12.5 million a year guarantee, but also then to back that up with a Tony Pollard fourth overall pick. Because, Rod, I mean, what was it? 4 years ago, they let DeMarco Murray go over 5 years and $40 million. That was $8 million a year to me. And he was, you know, 1,700 yards and all that. He was amazing. And you hadn't put that many carries on him throughout his career because it was just 2016 where you started using him right. So how then did they have that approach to the running back position 4 years ago? But now fast forward now, and since then, they've drafted so much and spent so much. Brian, you were in the building. What do you think changed in relation to those two things?
I think they were trying to help Romo with that whole thing. I think they were trying to – we did the same thing by going out and get Joey Galloway for Troy Aikman. Then you're trying to extend a career. You're trying to help him. You saw what happened with DeMarco Murray running the football. Well, heck, let's go out and get the best running back. Let's go get the best running back in the draft. Let's really help Tony Romo here.
Yeah.
It did help Dak Prescott.
Murray was 14, so the Joe Randall season happens in 15.
Yeah.
And the DeMarco, and the Darren McFadden.
Yeah.
So then they became convinced,
yeah.
We can't do it with
anyone. Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
All right, that flows chronologically, at least.
It does, but I would say the big difference in those years, like we're going to pretend it was the running back, but it wasn't. It was Matt Cassel and them trying to play quarterback that couldn't get the job done.
Yeah.
And then when Dak did play well,
yeah,
that was the difference.
And I think Jason Garrett loved Zeke. He loved DeMarco too, though, I guess.
Oh, he did.
It's just a different caliber of player, I guess, the expectation is.
They saw what a good running back did for Tony Romo. That's why I think they went the direction they did. I really do.
Yeah. I don't understand the double down of paying him when he's got multiple years left on the contract and he's holding out and like, oh, no, I'm not going to show up to camp. Yes, you are. You have 2 years left on your deal. You're not sitting out.
I think that was more about Kellen Moore. I don't think they wanted to. I don't think they wanted to take away possible weapons from Kellen Moore. That's just my opinion.
Kellen Moore was about to put a clinic on without him based on what I saw on Oxnard. That's the offense.
That's what's so
unusual
here for me. I totally misread that team in Oxnard. Totally.
Well, didn't they play different? My hours aren't off. They were doing a lot of stuff different.
No, they were.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me how things worked out that this team, I didn't think it'd be 8-8.
Yeah, that was one of the most disappointing seasons for any team in DFW sports
history. By far.
Unbelievable what we had to live through. Okay, disappointment or are you excited? What do you guys think? 877-881-1053. We're talking about Mark Cuban taking his displeasure with the officials public once again. Mike Fisher presented an interesting scenario earlier because I was tough on Cubes at the start of the show. I said, man, you got to be kidding me. We thought we were done with this. And now here the Mavs are back in somewhat of a contending sort of trajectory, right? They're young. Now Mark Cuban's back in the game, right? He's feeling excited. He's feeling engaged. He wants to watch this team grow. He's not just counting down the days till Dirk retires and hanging out at the AAC, right? Now there's actually something to get emotionally involved in. And winning and losing is very important to him. So Saturday night, the game ends in a weird way. Was it a weird call because of the replay and the lack of, review and the timing of the... Sure, it was weird, but we're used to now over the last couple of years this happening on a regular basis in the NBA because the status of replay and the perception that it should make things perfect has distorted our expectation of what NBA officiating is. And now the mistakes they make are magnified. It's even worse. Did Mark Cuban just lose his temper because he thought they were going to win and he's sick of watching them kick away the game late? Or Mike Fisher presents a scenario that he's been trying to quietly work on this with new commissioner Adam Silver, and that was just the straw that broke the camel's back and said, damn it, if you're not going to fix this with me going through what you call the proper channels, well, guess what? Take a look at this on Twitter. I would love to believe that second narrative. I want to believe Mark Cuban's capable of that sort of non-compulsive decision making.
This is the avenue that he needed. It wasn't about the game. It wasn't. It was just, okay, here it is. I told you guys, this is the problems we have. And he just... And
he's
he,
been waiting for it.
He's looking, been waiting for this to happen. And this, and finally, he got the opportunity. Yeah. Three different opportunities on one call, on one review.
Yeah.
And all of me felt like we're probably blown.
Do you think there's any way it's worth it to take it public like this? Can you seriously win and have it impact your team more than the others? That's my problem. Even if you fix this, it's still an even playing field. And even if you fix this, the refs are still going to hate you. It's probably not going to fix, so you're going to be frustrated with the refs hating you. I don't know. I don't know if there's a win in this. Even if you solve what you want, it applies to the other teams equally.
I think that to me, this I personally think he did the right thing. I don't think he could. Yeah, you could worry about your team and games and all that down the stretch, and you know the officiating. But he's got to do what he thinks is right. And I just believe this is the right opportunity for him to do that. He's like, listen, we've got an issue. I'm trying to tell you, these officials cost people games. And it's against Atlanta and maybe a meaningless game to you guys. But what if this happens 2-3 months from now?
Yeah.
Something, and we're not paying attention to that.
Yeah.
It might not matter right now, but it matters. It's going to matter in the playoffs when one of these officials do something in a game to cause somebody to lose it.
I like that narrative a lot, that he's got the best interest of the league in mind. He knows stuff that the NBA, who's drunk on all their cable TV money, isn't trying to pay attention to.
Sure.
I don't mind that narrative at all. And I could see it being the case, but with Mark Cuban's history, it's just hard to fully want to back him. Like, let's do that. Especially, you know, Dirk and 11 saying pipe down. You know, I think we've seen enough evidence that Mark Cuban unhinged and taking on the NBA might not be in the best interest of the Mavericks, but it is an older version of Mark. I thought at the start of the show, well, he hasn't learned anything.
That's what makes it worse to me, because I think everything that you guys are saying can be true, but you expect your 20-somethings on a basketball court to be able to keep their emotions in check, but the 61-year-old owner can't.
Jeez. Yeah,
like everybody, like even Steve Ballmer, who's kind of a crazy fan for the Clippers, right? He's celebrating.
Yeah.
Mark Cuban is the only owner in sports who runs onto the playing field. He's the only one. Yeah. You can't emotionally keep yourself in your chair? You can't stay in the chair?
No.
You can go scorched earth. You can say whatever you want after the game about an official if you cool down and think about it, but I think he's an emotional reactor and responder who can't keep that in check, and you're an adult who can't stay off the playing surface.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm looking back and I'm Mark Cuban on what happened this weekend, I'm not thinking it's time to call up Adam Silver and give him a piece of my mind. And again, I'm seeing your point and Jeff's point, though, but I'm thinking maybe I need to stay home. You know,
that's not in his DNA.
Yeah,
that's not in his DNA. And I worked for a hands-on owner. I did work for his hands-on owner, Jerry Jones, you know, and a lot of people give him grief for that. And there's a lot of things that he needed to have grief for. And I understand the problem I had with Cuban is going onto the floor.
Yeah, like Jerry's not going to run on the field and berate a ref.
I think in 2006 that maybe Mark Cuban was selfish about his team. Today, I think he's thinking about the NBA. I think he's had enough. In 2006, that was all about, and that's why Dirk probably said, shut up. Yeah. But today, I think it's more about, hey, we're going to have problems if we keep the path we're on right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, NBA officiating has driven me crazy on a whole new level over the last 5 years. I mean, it was bad in the 2000s, but with the move to replay, I think it's unnecessary and it solves nothing, and it's replay for the reason for replay. That's it.
I think like replay in every sport, they're all doing it wrong. It should just be like the XFL is the league that's doing it right. We have a guy
what
up
happened
there.
On
we
that
have
play.
A guy up there.
Yeah.
And the guy up there, if we miss something, will buzz us and he'll let us know and we'll fix it.
Yeah.
That's it.
The competition committee is talking about that right now in Indianapolis.
Awesome.
That is something that they're talking about, the eye in the sky guy.
Love it, Broadus. Okay, Jeff, your unnamed segment of the day is coming up next. Where are you going with it?
Joe Burrow says he might retire before the draft. It's next.
Well, thank you, Lucius. And coming up at 6 o'clock, we'll take a look at what is on 1053thefan.com. Right now, it's time for Jeff Kavanaugh's daily unnamed segment.
Joe Burrow, LSU quarterback and the presumed number one overall pick, is considering retirement. before the draft even takes place. He's thinking about giving up football today.
That's CTE concerns?
Yeah. Not CTE concerns. What
too
happened
good?
Is, not too good. That'd be a weird reason to retire.
Okay. Daddy's rich.
They get to, well, I don't know the financials of his father, but they get to the combine and we do all our measurements and Joe Burrow's hand size has been released to the public. 9 inches. In some ways, that's a great thing. But with hands, if that's your hand size, that is considered small for an NFL quarterback. And
yeah, I don't have big hands.
Yeah.
And they're certainly not very muscular.
Mm-hmm.
But mine stretch 9 1/4.
Really?
Yeah.
You got a bigger hand than Burrow. Tiny hand Joe Burrow. Back in the day, this was the Jared Goff joke. He was the tiny hand guy. He had the 9-inch hand. And so after it's been measured, the numbers get out to people. And since the numbers got out, everybody's talking about how big Joe Burrow's hand is. And he tweets, considering retirement, after I was informed the football will be slipping out of my tiny hands.
Yeah.
Please keep me in your thoughts.
Don't take that guy in any cold weather environments.
Whatever. If a guy's hands are too small to play football, it would show up on tape. And Joe Burrow throws the ball pretty darn well. I think Zach Taylor, former Nebraska quarterback, and has he been working with...
Isn't he the Bengals coach?
Yeah. So he's the Bengals coach, but they had both been instructed. Ryan Tannehill and Jared Goff both had a 9-inch hand, and they'd both been instructed by Zach Taylor, and they asked him about it, and Zach Taylor also, 9-inch hand, thumb to pinky. And he said the one time that that would sort of bother me and affect the way I throw it is when we were in humidity.
Oh,
and Joe Burrow's been playing in a bayou.
Swamp.
So I think if this were a problem, we would know about it. But there will be people who are going to talk about it. There has not been a, let me make sure I get the numbers right here. Over the past 10 years, only 3 quarterbacks with a 9-inch hand have attempted more than 300 passes. Goff, Tannehill, and Chad Henne. So there are people who look at hand size and care, and Joe Burrow's is very small for an NFL quarterback. Will the tiny hand man overcome this and find success playing football?
Did it used to be a bigger thing, Brian? Was it a deal where back in the day they couldn't protect the football well enough? They were reckless, and now they figured out, dude, I really got to carry it up here between my shoulders.
Yeah, well, you have a shorter guy like Drew Brees, and like his hands are 10 1/4.
Wow.
So here you have a shorter guy with really big hands. When I was in Green Bay with Ron Wolf, it was about cold weather quarterbacks were like the old back of the day, the Raiders and the stuff. He came with Al Davis. They would evaluate that. Small-handed quarterbacks tend to have problems in cold weather. So that was something you always considered. That was something I always brought up. You know, the guys like Dante Culpepper, those big old guys, Steve McNair, big-handed guys. You know, and so you always felt like, and that was always the first thing that old scouts would always ask about a quarterback. Not about arm strength, arm talent. It was, what was his hand size? That was a lot of things and a lot of meetings back in the day.
Does it give you any pause about Joe Burrow?
No, because I've seen Joe Burrow play in rain. I've seen Joe Burrow play in the humidity. I've seen him play in wind conditions. So, no, he controls the ball very well. Most of his games, outdoors, grass, and the SEC, you look at how they play. So, yeah, he's in a lot of tough conditions. He never had to deal with cold conditions. He is an Ohio kid, so he was at Ohio. He was recruited by Ohio State, signed at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
So they obviously felt like that, he could handle those types of things.
See what's happening here, Gavin? It's Homer over here is protecting his Sean Sharif hand quarterback. That's what we got going on over
here. Not at all. No,
there's got to be history of it. I think Dave Craig maybe led the league in fumbles for his career, had 9-inch hands or under. There's got to be examples throughout history.
I think Dave Craig took some wicked-ass hits, though, too.
And Burrow.
He was always getting sacked. Did he get something 9 times by the Kansas City game that one time?
Well, I know Joe Burrow, if you watch him play, would I care about how big or small a quarterback's hand was if he fumbled a bunch? Sure. Then it becomes relevant. But Burrow, from everything that I can see, he's a wizard in the pocket, moving around. And generally, he'll be a two-hand guy in the pocket while he's moving around. He kind of reminds me of Romo in that way, when you're watching him navigating and trying to squeeze through somewhere, and so he doesn't put the ball on the ground. So it's pretty much a nothing, but people are going to talk about it. Joe Burrow, man with tiny hands.
Mark Sanchez, 10.5 hands.
Wow.
Big fumbler there, right?
Was he? Yeah. Well, he's a butt fumbler.
Butt fumbler, but...
For sure.
Yeah, I just didn't see anything to lead me to believe that he was going to have problems in the pocket. And he was a runner that when he would get hit, he could protect the ball. I didn't see any problems there.
Well, if you want a bigger-handed guy, Tua checked in at 10. Justin Herbert checked in at 10. So Joe Burrow might go in the fourth round. We'll just have to check and see.
He gets to 17, we ought to take him.
Yeah, no kidding. Wouldn't that be great? You got 16 teams like, I can't take him, didn't meet the hand threshold.
Yeah.
Just don't know if it's going to translate.
Uh-huh.
Football won't translate from football to football.
Yeah, let me get the guy with a dislocated hip. That'd go much better.
Yeah, give me the guy with the injury history. Okay, in other news today, this one, I think this is real too, which is the weird part. Deontay Wilder needs somebody to give him better advice before a fight because he's been talking today. This is from Yahoo Sports. Deontay Wilder is asked about, hey, Tyson Fury beat you. That didn't go well. What happened? And he said, quote, he didn't hurt me at all, but the simple fact is my uniform was way too heavy for me. I didn't have no legs from the beginning of the fight. I didn't think it was going to be that heavy. It weighed 40 pounds with the helmet and all the batteries.
It's very awkward, I can imagine. Yeah.
So look, if you didn't see, this is what Deontay Wilder...
He's blaming it on the uniform? My man is reaching for everything right now.
Dude, that's a badass uniform, though.
My shoes came untied.
Oh, it was good.
Yeah, I mean, he had a full helmet with light-up eyes, and he had a whole, like...
I didn't have enough water in the water thing. That's what it was.
He looked like one of those walker dudes from the Game of Thrones, except all in jewelry.
Yeah.
He's reaching.
Yeah, a little bit.
He was bedazzled and he had a crown. And I think it's a great point because Brian mentioned this off the air. Tyson Fury rode to the ring.
He carried in.
On a throne. People carried him. He didn't even walk. He had all his energy.
He didn't warm up till later, by the way.
Well, and Deontay
Wilder was like warming up as soon as he got there.
And now Wilder was carrying a 40-pound weight vest for the 3-minute walk to the ring while Fury was carried to the ring.
So he overworked himself for this fight, huh?
I do actually buy it a little bit. Three minutes of walking around in a 40-pound outfit.
Stop.
I'm telling you, his legs were gone. Now, I think it's because he got punched in his ear.
Yeah.
And that's probably why his legs looked like they were gone the last 3 or 4 rounds.
His biorhythms could have been off, you know, not his day.
Yeah, could
definitely
have been
wasn't his day.
He definitely got punched directly in the ear, and from then on, it was ugly.
He knocked down Fury what twice in the first one? How could he be just that much worse? I think that was
Fury was drinking Fury's 30 worst. Diet Cokes a day for that fight, and now Fury got ready to fight. And I guess my biggest issue is, I don't buy it's the reason you lost the fight, but is it a terrible idea to carry 40 pounds worth of stuff with you for your multi-minute walk to the ring? Yes. And shouldn't somebody in your camp go, hey, are we sure we want to wear 40 pounds worth of crap?
Let's go with the Rocky
towel. Walk to the ring before we fight for 12 rounds?
I don't know what 40 pounds feels like to him. Like, for me, a 30-pound weighted blanket is too much, even when I'm lying in my bed. That's a professional athlete, you know? Like, military people will carry like 40 or 60 pound bags of stuff over mountains.
A whole sea bag for four miles.
Yeah, train, not on their way to the job.
Nope.
Like, they're not like, all right, guys, here's the thing. We're going to go up to that ridge over there and it's time to go to war. We're shooting today. And you're like, all right, hold on. Let me grab my training sack and make sure I wear myself out.
He's a pro athlete. It's 3 minutes.
Yep.
How much does a weighted vest weigh? That's what I got to check. Like, oh, yeah, most people wear a 20 or 40-pound weighted vest. Like, that's a workout. And nobody thought to even raise the question, are we sure that we want to load up 40 pounds of crap to walk to the ring?
I just lost 50 pounds. I can tell you what that feels like.
I tell you what, it does provide enough intrigue. I think that's what he and his agent are going for. Just enough intrigue. Maybe it's true. I'll tell you what, I don't know. But I will tell you, I'm curious enough to know if it's true to see if, with no outfit, he can whoop Fury's butt.
Yeah, and apparently he's going to try again. They're going to try again, and this time I bet he just wears shorts and a robe.
Why don't you learn how to box? That would help you.
That
probably
would help, too.
Yeah.
That would help, too, be a little bit of a better boxer.
But you think Fury was just such a slacker that it wasn't until now that he's put his best fight game together, and now he should be the undisputed champ for a little bit?
Well, Fury was coming off of what, depression and a cocaine binge?
Yeah.
Before he fought Wilder the first time?
Maybe so crack. I'm not quite sure which
one. Well, I would imagine he was in much better place than that for a fight that he trained for and was not doing all the drugs.
So he had recently been doing drugs?
I think it was his first fight back.
Yeah.
Like Wilder saved him. Wilder was like, hey, I'll fight you. Yeah. Can you please stop killing yourself? And he was like, fine, I guess, mate.
I think, mate, I think, though, probably this is Wilder's best chance at the big purse, right? And if he passes this time and Fury goes out and gets coked out again and loses, then there's not the rematch and he's fighting some other dude for a quarter of the money. Even if you know you're going to lose, what is it going to be, 40 or 50 million bucks?
Yeah, whatever 40% of the take would be. It'll be 40% to him on round three. Okay, in other news, Deontay Wilder's in his athletic prime. And couldn't walk to the ring and then be capable of boxing. But our guy, George Hood, this guy's a superhero. He's from Illinois. I love Guinness World Records. I want to find one that we can break. Just one that nobody really cares about. And it's just one guy who did something once and it's never been done before. So they're like, okay, world record. I want to go break one, like the beer mile. I was interested in that for a while.
I think you could have done that in your prime.
Because they used to have a record for every type of beer.
Mm-hmm.
So you just find the one that only one person's ever done, and you're like, I don't care if I like that beer or not. I can run it in faster than 26 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's get it. Well, this guy's 62 years old, former Marine. Hoorah. And he went after a record that is not easy. He went after the plank world record at the age of 62. You know, you're on your elbows and your forearms and your feet and you're just there. I guess you're not even on your forearm. No, it was a low plank. It was forearms, hands, and feet on the ground. And at the age of 62, he broke the world record.
Good for him.
I can plank for 90 seconds.
Not bad.
Yeah.
You've been working up to that?
Yes, because at first 60 was tough. I can plank for 90 seconds. The 62-year-old just set the record of 8 hours, 15 minutes, and 15 seconds.
Some guys are just born for that, built for that, right? I know a guy doesn't look to be in shape but can do like 800 push-ups. Like some people are just, you can do it. Hold your breath for 3 minutes. Mm. What are you born to do, right?
Saw a guy win a boxing title not looking like he was in shape the other night.
Yeah, Fury. He did say that training, he did about 2,100 hours of planking in preparation. You got to be pretty financially well off to be spending all your time getting ready to break the plank record, don't you?
He said he was retired, right?
Yeah, I guess he is retired.
Or just a minimalist.
He said 4 to 5 hours a day in the plank pose. Then I do 700 push-ups a day.
Oh, you can crack a brick over there, dude.
Oh, jeez.
2,000 sit-ups a day in sets of 100. 500 leg squats a day.
Herschel Walker?
And 300 arm curls a day. He said it also helps to listen to rock music. His favorites include Van Halen and Rammstein.
I don't know about that selection,
Panama?
But
yes, we will Panama salute you. And was Rammstein Du Hast?
Du Hast,
is that right?
All right.
8 hours of planking?
That's a lot of planking.
Come on, man.
Yeah, you better have a really good-looking stomach for that.
I mean, he looks good for 62.
Good for him.
He looks better than I do.
Roids? No roids?
No, he looks legit. No, he looks legit. Yeah, I don't see anything that looks absurd on him.
What is on 1053thefan.com? We have a combine primer and names to watch for the Cowboys coming at you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.